Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The NFL draft begins a week from Thursday. Ravens Liars luncheon is tomorrow. It's a perfect time to head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Brian Wacker covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Sun. He joins us now. And Brian, thank you as always for joining us. So I'm going to start you with something I think I've asked you before, but time has passed. As we sit here right now, how confident are you that Mark Andrews is still a Raven at the end of Saturday? A week from Saturday.
Yeah, you know, look, this is going to be a popular topic all the way up through Thursday, I think. That said, look, I remain pretty confident. I think you have to look at John Harbaugh's words at the owners' meeting saying he fully expects Andrews to be on the team this season. And look, I think there's validity to that. This is a guy who is an all-timer. He's still one of the best tight ends in the league. He's a security blanket for Lamar Jackson. We know that. And this is, you know, a roster that is largely, you know, one of the best rosters in the league. Sure, there's, you know, a couple of holes here and there and some depth issues and all of those sorts of things. But this is a team that everyone in the building expects to contend for Super Bowl. Everyone, a lot of people outside the building expect to contend for Super Bowl. So I don't know how you go and trade Mark Andrews and upset that chemistry, that room, the talent level, whatever you want to call it, when you have this sort of roster. And, you know, look, if they were to get an offer they couldn't refuse, in the words of Michael Corleone, sure. You know, would you consider – you know, a draft pick and a third round draft pick and a player or something like that. Sure. Maybe that could entice them, but I'm just not sure. I see that when Andrews is a player who's going to be a free agent at the end of this season, by all accounts, I don't really see the Ravens extending him at this point. Maybe they do, but that seems unlikely given the price tag and given likely behind him. So I don't know why a team would kind of bend over backwards to offer a deal the Ravens couldn't refuse. And I'm not sure the Ravens would move on for him unless they had that kind of offer.
Brian, given all of that, we know that Eric DaCosta loves having a ton of picks and they have 11 picks this year. That being said, given the fact that this is already a really good roster, 11 rookies are not going to make this team this upcoming fall. Could you see Eric DaCosta breaking tendency and maybe trading up in the first round?
You know, that's a thought that I explored earlier this offseason as well in a couple of different draft stories for the Baltimore Sun, and talking to folks, you know, both draft experts and folks kind of around the league. And look, I think it would be a surprise. I mean, one, to your point, it's not something he tends to do, does not tend to trade up in the first round. That's just not the Ravens' norm. Number two, this is a draft that's been touted as pretty deep at a number of positions really the Ravens could use. So, you know, what's the value really in trading up to get a guy, you know, that they feel like might be available when they pick 27, or getting a guy that they're comfortable with, getting some of those mid-round players they think that they can build depth with and find some gems as they have in the past in the third and fourth rounds, fifth round. So, you know, to me, I'd be a little surprised if the Ravens traded up. You know, I don't see them trading up for an offensive lineman, for example. I think that was a question, you know, certainly if they had not been able to bring back Ronnie Stanley, sure, maybe you trade up for a left tackle that you can plug and play right away. But there's, you know, plenty of depth in this draft on the defensive line, at the edge, even at linebacker. So I just don't see them really making that kind of move to trade up.
We talked a lot about the linebacker position last week and in terms of different ways they could approach it in the draft. The whole Trenton Simpson, is he the guy, isn't he the guy? And then also Roquan Smith taking a pretty marked step back last year. And we look at the Lamar contract situation, and they're going to have to deal with that. They're going to have at least one receiver and maybe two, because Bateman looks like he might be a thing now that need to get fed in the, you know, in the next year or so. The Hamilton thing, maybe Linderbaum, maybe not. Like, under that backdrop, how big of a deal do you think it is for Roquan Smith to look like a $20 million linebacker this year? Or could that be an area that a year from now they're just like, we can't, you know, we might have to recalibrate?
Yeah, look, I mean, Roquan Smith's deal runs through the 2027 season. You know, certainly if he were to kind of you know, not continue to play to the standard, to your point, I think he would agree himself, took a step back this past year. Not that he had a terrible year, but not certainly the, I know he's voted all pro, yeah, but he certainly didn't play to the all pro level that he had been in previous years. So look, I think that's a position they will address in the draft. Trenton Simpson's struggles have been well documented. That said, John Harbaugh expects him to take big step forward this year and be the starting early down inside linebacker alongside Roquan. So, you know, I look, and you guys know this better than I do. Certainly Patrick Queen had some struggles early on in his Ravens career and ended up being a pretty nice player, yep, for them in the end for a few years. You know, I don't know that we'll get there with Trenton Simpson to that level, but you know, that's okay. If he's not quite to that level, I think everyone would agree Patrick Queen was pretty good, certainly benefited alongside, you know, playing alongside Roquan. So I do expect them to draft at the linebacker position. And I do think, you know, we'll look at Roquan Smith and, you know, all the money committed there in these next few years and figure out a plan, because, you know, and from Roquan's standpoint, look, if he wants to get another similar contract that he got from the Ravens, $100 million, he knows that he's obviously going to have to improve his play from this past season. Look, do I think he will play better than he did last year? It's hard to think he won't, given just the body of work, you know, the rest of his career compared to just the one season this past year.
Talking with Brian Wagert, Inside Access here on the Fan. Brian, are you surprised that they haven't – you've got a Lamar potential extension you could do, a Kyle Hamilton, Tyler Linderbaum, even a Derrick Henry. Did you think they'd have at least one of those done before the draft?
You know, there's still a chance they could get one of those done, mm-hmm, before the draft. And I would think if there is one that gets done before the draft, it would probably be Henry, maybe Hamilton. But I would probably lean more on in the Derrick Henry vein. That said, look, there's time for them to get all of those deals done. I think Lamar probably has the longest runway to get that deal done. You know, That said, I think Hamilton's a guy they will also look at. They certainly want to prioritize, and he's a guy that, you know, is probably going to be the highest paid safety in the NFL, which is a big chunk of money. So, you know, I would expect that to get done. Linderbaum will be interesting because you've got some options there with franchise tag and fifth year option and different ways to go about that, that, you know, could potentially benefit them rather than signing him to an extension now. And, you know, he has dealt with some injury. Look, I think he is the perfect type of player. I think he's a guy who probably plays for the long term here in Baltimore for his career. He just fits them in so many ways. You know, as long as he can stay healthy, you know, as I mentioned, he's had some injury issues, most notably neck, that he's dealt with. And, you know, that's a tough position physically. So as long as he holds up, I would expect him to get paid pretty well as well. And I think that's another reason, guys, that, you know, this draft is important in terms of those 11 picks, because they need to build up some young talent that, you know, comes on the cheap, because they have quite a number of guys, whether it's Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, you know, Kyle Hamilton, Tyler Linderbaum, who are going to get paid, and they're going to need to pay, you know, Isaiah Likely is another guy. So to me, that's, you need to build up some guys that you can plug in and play in the next year or so with all these big contracts coming due.
Brian Wacker covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Sun. Brian, thank you as always for your time. I'll see you at lunch tomorrow.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. Hey, League at Large coming up next. And the Ravens, as we've documented, pick late in the first round, the 27th to be exact. Let's hear from a couple of coaches who pick ahead of the Ravens. D'Amico Ryans, Kevin O'Connell. What do they have to say about the draft and free agency? We'll hear about it next. League at Large here on The Fan.
All four guys are as valuable, but the interior D-linemen are most effective because of the quick pressure on the quarterback. So you get a three technique who can beat a guard very quickly, and you put pressure at the quarterback's lap as soon as he's dropping back. I feel like sometimes that impacts the quarterback a lot more than the edge rushers who have to run the hoop, so to speak, around the tackle. So you're seeing this year's draft class, you're seeing a lot more explosive young interior defensive linemen who will definitely impact the draft.
That's D'Amico Ryans, the head coach of the Houston Texans, and we bring you that because he's talking about the draft, and the Texans picked 25th, the Ravens picked 27th, so is it possible the Houston Texans could take somebody the Ravens covet at 27?
Look, there's a lot of people who would look at the Texans and the state of their offensive line last year and then trading Laremy Tunsil and look, there wasn't a whole lot to do. Like, if you really wanted to upgrade in free agency, like, Ronnie Stanley didn't change teams, or not a whole lot of tackles out there. So there's a lot of people who look at that and say, my God, right? They've got a young quarterback, and the offensive line looks like it needs help. They're going to take an offensive lineman. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. Like, he comes from a background in San Francisco where they were constantly accumulating defensive linemen, and they wanted to have as deep and robust of a rotation as you can. Their interior defensive line was a problem last year at times. They've got some young edge rushers that they like, but I'll put it to you this way. I'm not convinced that they don't take a D lineman. If there's one sitting there who they have the grade on and they think a lot of these offensive linemen just aren't of the same caliber, and maybe there's a little bit more of a run on offensive linemen than some are projecting in the first 20-some picks, that picks through it even more, it wouldn't shock me if they grab a player who we think would have been a Baltimore Raven if not for them intervening.
Yeah, definitely not. And look, you can look at the handful of picks even beyond them. Steelers need defensive line help. The Chargers need defensive line and edge help. Even the Packers, where I think there's potential for a lot of these teams in front of them to really dip into that defensive line class.
Well, let's take a look at another team in front of them. The Minnesota Vikings picked 24th. Head coach Kevin O'Connell, did free agency set them up to take the best player available?
Here's what I would say. I would say we've got to have a mindset of, I think best player available is good. at some positions, though, what you don't want is best player available has such a tremendous roadblock to getting on the field in front of them, you know, where, like, I think when you look at some development of position, some really need to be out there, whether it's physicality, the speed of the game, just the repetitions that come with getting a real opportunity. So I think we can be in a best available mentality. But I think we want to draft players that are going to be high-impact players, especially with our first-round picks.
Minnesota Vikings, who declined to bring in Aaron Rodgers, J.J. McCarthy will be the quarterback for that football team. And they have talent around, so maybe that allows them to take the best player.
And I don't think that's performance art there. I don't think that's performative. I think O'Connell's a pretty straight shooter, and I think he's telling you I think he's telling you they're taking an offensive lineman. Like, they've got a pretty good roster. They won a lot of games last year. They're going from a veteran quarterback to a kid who's never played in the NFL before. And that's a kid who, let's face it, that Michigan offensive line was dominant. I mean, he had a dominant run game. He had a dominant offensive line. Well, the verdict, a lot of people were saying, how could you take him that high? Harbaugh didn't make him do anything. The team, the offense won the games. McCarthy was just along for the ride. He didn't even look that great against Maryland. I mean, there was a lot of that going around.
Yeah, I was not a big McCarthy fan.
So you're going to tell me that you're not going to try to upgrade an offensive line that had its share of issues and try to provide him with everything you can to allow him to develop quickly? Like, I think they feel really good about their wide receivers. They feel really good about their tight ends. I think they couldn't run the ball last year the way they'd like, in part because a lot of it had to do with the offensive line. So whether it's the kid Gray Zabels, an interior offensive lineman who I think teams like more than some of the mock drafters, or maybe it's a tackle they think could also kick inside, I do think that's a team that is looking to get somebody to start from day one, start on that offensive line, and help get that unit going.
They're sort of pigeonholed into that selection when you consider the fact that they only have four picks.
Yeah.
First round, third round, fifth, and sixth. That is it.
Yeah. I don't even know where the value is. I looked at it like 3 weeks ago, but I mean, Vikings first pick offensive line, sometimes it just is what it is. That might be like a minus 175 type deal at this point, but that is a team that I feel like they have a particular need with that pick.
Jason, we're less than 2 weeks out from the draft, and there's a lot of stuff out there in the NFL atmosphere. And you know, the Ravens are going to host something tomorrow called the Liars Lunch. So you wonder what to believe. How much of the Shedeur Sanders slipping buzz are you buying? Because there's a lot of it out
there. I'm certainly not buying this idea now that like Jackson Dart might go before him. Like that seems to have floated out into the ether over the weekend. I think he's a prospect who still has some flaws, like most of these kids. And there are some really good defensive players in particular in this draft who definitely are top 10 picks, should be top 10 picks. I mean, how far does he fall? I don't know. Like, if he goes ninth overall to the Saints, is that a fall? I get it's less money than at second overall. Like, I get that, but I mean, I don't think that's precipitous. I mean, I don't think he's getting past them, and I don't think they're taking Jackson Dart over him. So, I mean, I don't think Deion Sanders and the Sanders family would be like crying in their soup if he, you know what I mean? If he went and if that program sent the second overall pick and the ninth overall pick to the NFL, considering where that program was when he got there, I don't, you know, I mean, sure, you want him to go as high as possible, but I mean, is that terrible?
No.
That offense had its share of issues last year.
Yeah.
Kid took a lot of sacks. Like, there were some, you know, there's some things that have to get cleaned up. So, but the whole, some of these sidebars that have sort of materialized, mm-hmm. No, I don't think. Jackson Dart is the second quarterback in this draft.
Coming up next, here on the program, and Eric Langenhagen is going to join us. Coming to 5 o'clock. He's from Fangraphs, and interesting top 30 Orioles prospect list just came out from Fangraphs. Get his thoughts on the Orioles farm system. But coming up next, we stick with football, and Eric DaCosta is not one to trade up, but he's got 11 picks and not a lot of needs. Is this the year where we see the leopard change his spots? We'll discuss next.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here on the Fan. Unbelievably, the draft is less than 2 weeks away. A week from Thursday, the draft begins. Ravens hold their yearly draft lunch, and they call it the Liar's Lunch. It's tomorrow at, I think, lunch is 11. The press conference is 11:45, so we'll have insights on that tomorrow when we take air. But they have 11 picks, Jason, and they don't have a whole lot of needs. Isn't this the year where you might find that guy you like a little bit more than some others, and you trade up to get the guy you want?
I'd like to think that they're more open-minded to it than they maybe have been before. I'd like to think that, you know, they learn from some of their, mistakes. I mean, they not every approach that they've ever taken to the draft is the best approach. And they haven't, I don't know, been in many situations before where they've had this sort of roster construction. They've had this many pluses in the offensive side of things, especially when you start looking at guys who giving you value, bang for your buck on offense. I don't know if the team construction's been set up that way before. And you've got a draft that aligns with your needs on defense. And yes, it's great that you can find starters at D tackle on the second day, but you're not maybe finding that edge guy on the second day who's nearly as good as dudes who are going to go in the first 15 picks, and you're not going to be able to supplement everything, and they're not all going to make your team, and not all of your picks the last couple of years who have kind of hung around someone's reputation are going to make your team either. So, yeah, I'd like to see them break tendency. I'd like to see them try to find a way to come out of this with two blue-chip defensive players, you know, in the first 50-some picks instead of the first 60. They've got to a certain point with a certain composition on defense, and it has tended not to have the playmakers make plays the way they need it. It doesn't show up in the sack. The best quarterbacks don't take stupid sacks in the playoffs. You got to beat somebody fast to get there. You know, the lamest coordinators get weeded out. The field gets thinned out. To beat a Josh Allen or a Mahomes in their place in January, you're probably going to need more dudes in your front seven. to think that Van Noy could be your best edge guy again come next January and that be good enough to beat three or four straight quarterbacks, I don't think it's going to be. To think your scheme can always be the star, I don't know that that's going to be true. Is Jones good enough next to Matabike? I don't know. Is that whole group, Owe and Van Noy, as your starting defensive end / outside linebackers in the playoffs, is that going to be good enough individually? I don't know. And is waiting until pick 27 or 28 to see what falls to you going to allow you to upgrade this year in real time with somebody you hope is plug and play impact, not somebody who blossoms in year two or year three? I don't know, man. I think it's time to take those 11 picks and take your Mark Andrews and take your Ajabo and take some of the other guys we've talked about who we think could be surplus to requirements and manipulate this draft board to get more quality early and also at the same time to serve that higher calling of always keeping the cupboard stored and pick up some 2026 draft picks along the way.
And keep in mind that have three projected comp picks for next year already, so that would be 10 right there. But this team and this roster has been really, really good over the past couple of years, but for a multitude of reasons, they haven't gotten over the hump. And they made it to the AFC Championship a couple years ago. You came up short in the divisional round last year. It's time to do things a little differently. It's time to be more aggressive. And something that they have really lacked in these postseason games under Lamar Jackson are defensive playmakers. They have not forced many turnovers at all in those football games. And if you identify a player that you think could be that next cornerstone type guy, go up and get him. 11 rookies are not making this team next year. And it really would break tendency where you had the draft day trade in 2022 with Marquise Brown and a pick swap there to get that pick that was eventually Tyler Linderbaum. But in terms of pick for pick, the highest round that Eric DaCosta has traded up in was the third round in 2019 to get Miles Boykin. Obviously, that pick didn't end up working out, but I'm with you. I think now is the time to be aggressive. Pittsburgh is extremely vulnerable. Cincinnati's extremely vulnerable. Kansas City needs offensive line help. Buffalo, they have their needs defensively. Your roster, for the most part, is fully intact from last year. Now it's time to put it over the top.
I do want to remind people, we were doing this show in 2022 when the Ravens had 6 fourth-round picks, and correct me if I'm wrong, we thought there was no way they were using all 6 of those fourth-round picks.
Seemed unlikely, improbable.
Yeah, and they did, and they got Daniel Folele, Jalen Armour-Davis, Charlie Kohler, Jordan Stout, Isaiah Likely, and Pepe Williams. Now, 5 of those guys are still here. Jalen Armour-Davis is just hanging on. Jordan Stout is a punter. Charlie Kohler is a nice player. Now, Folele became a starter guard this year, and Isaiah Likely looks like a breakout star. Now, I guess their response is we had more swings, and that allowed us the opportunity to get Isaiah Likely, who, by the way, was the 5th of the 6 fourth-round picks. But I think we were convinced, Jason, going into that draft, they were going to package a couple of those to move up to get a player they targeted earlier.
Yeah. And again, I would say their roster's a little different now than it was then. The quarterback wasn't making this kind of money then. They didn't have receivers who were going to need to be paid down the line then. I think this is a big year for Roquan Smith.
Yeah.
If you want to keep playing with a $20 million linebacker, he better be better next year. So who's next to him? You know, They tried it the 6th round pick, 3rd round pick, 4th round pick last. You know, they've tried it that way. They tried it the 1st round pick with Queen, and then they moved off him because they didn't want to pay 2 of them. Well, now you got to find that other guy. Like, could they find him in the 4th round? Yeah, they could. But they have a chance to take some of those assets and end up picking at the top of the 2nd round. And that's something I and there's got to be a natural drop off at some of these position groups that they anticipate. You know, it's great to say, oh, they all fell to us like we thought they would. But I mean, how much of that is gobbledygook? How much of that is real? How much of that is spin?
Nice.
Yes, two of the first 54 players is great. But what about two of the first 35? Is that the kind of thing that really energizes this defense? Do you get not just two bodies who you think will develop by year three, but like two people who go into your rotation in your front seven and you think start making you better in October or November? I don't know. And look, maybe they do something like that and they still want to wait for the D tackle because it is just that that generational. Yeah. But like, if they do take the safety first and they don't take a pass rusher until the second or third round with where they're picking, I think it runs the risk that that person looks way more developmental than difference maker-ish.
Remember, the draft is a week from Thursday. The Ravens draft luncheon is tomorrow. Bone and I are going. We will definitely let you know. Oh, we'll hear what they have to say and let you know what we thought about it. That'll be on tomorrow's show. But coming up next, remember, Eric Longenhagen is joining us at 5 o'clock from Fangraphs. Get his thoughts on the world's farm system. But we head down on the farm next, and Brandon Young seems to be the next man up for the Orioles. What does he look like so far this year? And what's going on with international prospects in the Baltimore Orioles? Because it hasn't gone as planned with that new Dominican Academy. We discuss next here on The Fan. Orioles actually made a roster move today. They have DFA'd left-handed pitcher Luis Gonzalez and claimed Scott Blewett on waivers from the Twins. So they will have to make another move. Probably Colin Selby getting DFA'd as Scott Blewett is out of options. But let's go
you
down.
You think they quit Colin Selby that quick?
I think that's...
They love them from Colin Selby.
Well, who else is
he's on the playoff roster.
I hear you. And he might be back in Norfolk after he clears waivers. But he will not be on the Major League roster.
It's a big risk.
I bet when they play the Guardians tomorrow. The starting rotation situation, and Brandon Young is not here yet, but we expect him to be here. And what have you thought of him so far in the Young minor league season?
Well, he got rocked over the weekend. So they moved him around a little bit. They moved his start around. I don't know if they kind of had one eye towards what might be going on up here. His first two outings, the opponents were having real difficulty picking up the ball coming out of his hands. There is some deception. In his delivery, he didn't give up any earned runs the first two times out. He got pounded the last time out. And it's early in the year. That stuff's going to happen. Guys are going to get hit. It's inevitable. I do often, though, sort of wonder about the human element of this. Like, how many times have we seen this before where there's somebody who thinks they might be getting the call and they're kind of anticipating their major league debut and guys are going down at the big league level and then they scratch them from a start and they move them around. Yeah. And there's that human nature to think, oh, well, I might be going to the major leagues. And instead, no, you're just pitching to Gwinnett and you're doing it on not your normal day to pitch. And look, he did get six more strikeouts in five innings pitched. So like Brandon Young struck out 14 batters in 10 and a third this season. That's great. But you know, he gave up five earned runs and six hits and five innings pitched against the Gwinnett Stripers. So that one did not go nearly as well as the previous two. So, you know, we'll see. They're on an unusual schedule. Day off today. They've got another built-in day off
next
week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if weather plays any other role in this. I don't think one bad start would derail him from being the next guy up, in part because there's nobody else. Gibby's going to pitch a 1 o'clock game tomorrow for the Tides. He's got a ways to go. Kyle Gibson does to actually be ready to start a major league game, even for a team that's in the type of pitching crisis that the Orioles have right now. So, you know, Brandon Young will go again in a few days. We'll see what that looks like. I do think if they need a starter, he would be that guy. And Gibson, I can't imagine Kyle Gibson pitches until
May.
Mid-May? I mean, mid to late May? I mean, the guy's pitched three innings. So
they like to move fast.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's different for pitchers than Gunnar Henderson. It just is. And they probably did move too fast for Gunnar Henderson. But look, I'm interested to talk to Eric Longenhagen from Fangraphs, because there's like, as someone who pays close attention to this farm system, there's some things that I'm seeing that strike me as, if they're as good as they're supposed to be, I'm not sure that this is what it should look like. But I also don't know, because this is the only team I've obsessed about to this level, and they didn't do anything in the international markets for, I mean, 20 years until...
They abstained.
6 years ago.
Yeah.
So what is it? Is it fair to wonder if somebody other than Sam Basayo as a position player should be doing anything in the system whatsoever outside of the draft? Because, like, he's the only one. Like, he's it. He's it. Like, even the kids they have at high A, several of them they gave millions of dollars to, like Michael Hernandez. Like, I mean, when a kid's 21 and he's in low A or high A and it hasn't happened for him yet, and you gave them big money 4 or 5 years ago, and they're all lottery tickets. You're not going to hit on many of them, but like, should some of them look like they've got at least a high minor league role player future? Like, I don't know. You know, I don't know. When Juan Nunez, who you got from the Twins as part of the Cano trade, when he's unprotected in the minor league Rule 5 draft and he gets selected and the other team gives him back to you and he's still a top 15 prospect for you, That strikes me as non-ideal. That strikes me as the kind of thing that would have happened 10 Old years regime. Ago. Like, I don't know, man. Like, what's been going on now that we're not picking in the top five anymore? Like, are there the type of success stories that we're seeing in other places? Like, should more of that be happening here? Like, do they have certain types? Stowers, Beavers, Fabian, Honeycutt, Heston, like, Kowser, they're not all the same, but they're all kind of the same. Like, the fact that Kowser's the only one who looks like he's a major league regular at this point, is that a problem? Because they've got, like, 6 picks coming up in next year's draft with all the comps, because they didn't pay anybody to stay this year. So, like, are we sure the right people are there to get it right? Does somebody else deserve a crack? Should they be changing up their amateur evaluations? We know that the major league level there's been problems, but is it going as swimmingly as it once was at the lower levels?
Well, we're going to ask Eric Longenhagen. He's a Fangraphs lead prospect analyst. What's he think of this Orioles farm system? He's going to tell us next here on The Fan.